BBC Radio Lancashire Sport with Andy Bayes.
Hello. Over the next two Wednesdays on BBC Radio Lancashire, we're going to reflect on a special person who turned 50 years old earlier in 2018. Gary Parkinson represented three Lancashire clubs as a player and another two as a coach. A right back with a keen eye for goal. He's remembered fondly as a player for Burnley, Preston North End and Blackpool, as well, of course, as his beloved Middlesbrough, where it all began. In his brief time out of full-time employment from the game, Gary was a regular on BBC Radio Lancashire, whether it be the Friday night football hour or providing match commentaries alongside me or anybody else. With Gary's cooperation and permission, he's given us the opportunity to speak to those close to him on how life is for him these days, 8 years on from a catastrophic stroke which changed his and his family's lives forever.
If we get a smile every day, then we feel like we're doing a good job. He does have days when he's feeling down, but hopefully we try to keep him upbeat. And if we're feeling a bit down, we'll try and think of something that'll cheer him up, and it usually involves football or racing.
My dad's always been my hero. As far as being like ill or having a serious illness like this, I never expected that. You see a fit dad in terms of someone who was 40-odd at the time, and his calves were massive, his thighs were massive, so you think, just like any other footballer, you're never going to have an illness like that strikes as quickly as it did.
We are hoping that, you know, in the future, you never know, people have come out of this syndrome, and we'll live on the fact that he may, and we'll only try and deliver his rehab so that potentially, or hopefully, he could come out of it.
Love him to bits, really, as a guy and a man, and he's just the saddest thing ever. Life's not fair, really. Such a great guy, lovely family, and for it to be taken away to the extent it has been. And yet I've also lost loved ones, really close people to me, and at least for Deb's Park, he's still there. You know, she can touch him, she can hold him, he's still there, she can talk to him. And, you know, that's a blessing, I think.
I've played with Parky. We've been coaching over at Blackpool together, and he was just a fantastic guy around the place. You know, the youth team, he had it absolutely off to a tee there. The lads respected him and that. And it's so, so sad, you know, when I go and see him and that. But Debbie and the family, to the credit, have been absolutely fantastic.
It's heartbreaking. I mean, you know, I go to visit and I have the crack, I have the banter with him, and then you walk away and you get in your car and you take a moment and you think, you know what, you don't realise how lucky you are when you see a family like that and a lad who was as fit and as healthy as anybody. But it just shows you that you really need to take life one day at a time and enjoy every moment of it.
How can that happen? Parky, you know, I remember you in the dressing room and putting your shit on, and then suddenly it's happened, and you knew Debs, you knew the kids, and, well, they're not kids now, they're young adults as it's gone on, and you just think, wow, whoa, that's stunned.
It is an uncommon condition. I think that in my clinical practice since probably the mid-80s, I have seen only two patients with locked-in syndrome. But it is an absolutely devastating condition when you see it.
Park is two interests, racing and football, exactly the same as mine. So that's what we talked about. And you never ever thought there was anything wrong with him. And it was just when he got that call that one day that he fell ill, it was just an incredible sense of shock. And I even get the feeling now, and I get a tingle in my body even when I talk about it, because I know I've got that image of him sat there, helpless.
Inside the last 3 minutes, all square at two apiece. Are we going to see a late North End winner? Free kick taken. Here's Parkinson with a shot. Yes, we are! Yes, we are! Gary Parkinson with the shot. I paused in commentary because Samways, the keeper, seemed to have it covered, and he made a real dog's breakfast of it. It went in straight over his head, into the top of the net, and North End, well, this would be a precious victory.
Gary Parkinson at 50. On BBC Radio Lancashire.
Well, those are just some of the voices you'll hear this evening and next week. Gary Parkinson was a central figure in dressing rooms in the North East and four clubs here in the North West. He's always been unashamedly a family man. He's been married to Deborah for 27 years, and he's a dad to three of Luke, Chloe and Sophie. His playing days began with Middlesbrough, and times weren't easy, according to his longtime friend and teammate at Ayersham Park, Tony Mowbray.
It was just one of the lads. It was a very, very young team. The club had gone into liquidation in 86. Parky was one of the young kids who got brought up from, like, the youth team and put in the team, basically, because anybody who was earning any sort of salary left. the gates of the stadium were shut. We had to go and play our first game at Hartlepool. Parky, Stuart Ripley, maybe he had played a handful of games the season before, but Stuart Ripley, Bernie Slaven, Gary Pallister had just arrived not long earlier. A bunch of young lads, really, that were thrown into a team, and Parky was just one of the young lads. I played right centre-half in a back four. Parky played 10 yards away on the right-hand side of me, and so I played very, very closely with Parky. I probably had his life, really, as I was a few years older, but I wasn't full of speed and mobility, and I didn't like running into corner flags, and so Parky, as the right back, was told to stay alongside me, and anything went over my head, he'd have to go and chase and cover it. But he was a top guy. He had a fantastic right foot. He had a sledgehammer of a right foot, really. He could hit amazing diagonals. He loved to get forward and shoot. He was just a young lad that was probably put in before he should have been, and yet he had to learn to swim very quickly, sink or swim, and Parky was swimming very quickly, and was integral in the back four of Parkinson, Mowbray, Pallister and Cooper. Pairs behind them that won two promotions back to back, got to the top division, and is still now 30-odd years later a revered team on Teesside, and Parky's very much part of folklore in Middlesbrough. I think all of those lads I still call mates 32 years ago, and everybody, when they see each other, when we bump into each other, when we have a reunion or something, it was like it was yesterday. Just the affinity and the closeness you can get with a group of people that you go through adversity with and you come out the other end, there's nothing like it in life. It's a bond that'll stay with us all for the rest of our lives, and Parky is very much a part of that. The times I've seen Parky, mainly been at events when Deb's brought him over, and I'm an emotional person, you know, a passionate person, and I find it really hard to see this lad who was, you know, I spent 5-6 of my best years of my life playing football right next to him, and travelling away on coaches, spending 5-6 hours from Teesside, sitting on a coach next to him, playing alongside him, going through the good times, the bad times, going on pre-season trips, end-of-season trips, get to know each other inside out, really, and have the success that we had, and then, you know, the sadness that's attached to it. I get quite emotional when I see Pi. I find it difficult to think about going and visiting him and trying to get reactions from him, and when I have been in his company, just try and make him laugh.
The back four of Parkinson, Mowbray, Pallister and Cooper at Ayersham Park is still spoken about on Teesside, not just for their success on the field.
Did you get your hair done together,
all of you? That blonde-haired back four back then in the late 1980s?
No, we didn't, to be honest, but we did all have blonde hair. People constantly send me pictures of me in 1980s with shorts that look obscene now, ridiculously short shorts and blonde, huge blonde flicks at, you know, peroxide blonde. Parky had a huge one, like me, quiff really at the front, and I think his was more natural than mine. I think Parky probably was more naturally blonde than I was, but yeah, it's quite amusing when you look back really. But that was the 80s, everybody had a sunbed, everybody got their hair pulled through one of those caps that you used to put on your head with a little needle. It's comical to look back and think now, but that's what the world was in 1980. Wham! I used to go to watch Wham! And Last Christmas came out in 1986. Great memories, great time, great football team, great people, and Gary Parkinson's very much part of that.
It was when Gary left Middlesbrough that he came to the North West. He had a brief spell with Bolton, which is where the family home has been ever since. And then a spell at Burnley, where he'll always remain part of Claret's folklore.
Parkinson's going to have a run. He's just a few yards from goal. Good overlapping. Ball played into the area. It might come for Parkinson again. Shooting. Goalkeeper's not saved it. Yeah! It's gone in! It's gone in! And Burnley have done it! Gary Parkinson, who was playing reserve team football back in January for Bolton, has scored a goal at the number one stage for football. The fullback, two goals now this season, but I think he'll remember this one ahead of the goal that he scored at Leighton Orient earlier in the season. And Burnley, once behind, now lead the second division playoff final. An unlikely scorer, but who cares? It's Gary Parkinson. Miller feeds it infield, and there goes the full-time whistle. They've done it. Burnley Football Club is back in Division 1. It's been a long, long old season,
But at the end of May, Turf Moor is at Wembley to celebrate one of the greatest days in the history of this proud, proud club. They've done it for an unlikely source. Gary Parkinson, you can question Jimmy Mullen's transfer selections if you like, but never question that one. As John Francis, the man who got them to Wembley, hobbles onto the field. Joyous scenes amongst the supporters around us. 35,000 maybe Burnley fans have made their way down to Wembley.
David Ayres played alongside him at Burnley and at Preston North End. He says they shared some unforgettable memories.
You had to be there to obviously understand, you know, the banter that flew around the dressing room. You know, I first met Parky when he came in at Burnley, and he just lit up the dressing room straight away. He wasn't a shy lad. Straight away, you know, he started giving lads stick. Settled in very comfortably. Unfortunately, that season, you know, we done really well as a team and eventually got promoted via Wembley. And it was fitting that Gary obviously got the winner. It's something that probably every young boy has dreamed of doing, getting the winner at Wembley and playing a big part in that game. Yeah, it's just an absolute fantastic lad he is.
I bet he's never let you hear the end of that. Winner, hasn't he, seeing as you scored the other goal on the day?
Heath down the right-hand side, another late challenge coming in, but Burnley carry on. Ayres, left foot, he's got inside one. David Ayres inside two, inside the area, still going. David Ayres with a shot, oh yes! David Ayres with a quite fantastic goal, a splendid goal, and Wembley comes alive.
To be fair to him, he always mentions my goal, and he always said that his was a bit of a fluke and whatever, but it didn't matter. I don't think he quite caught it as sweetly as he could do, because he certainly could ping a ball when he wanted to, but it didn't matter. It did bounce a couple of times, but it ended up in the back of the net, and it was very difficult to catch him after he scored. Me and John Dairy, I think it was, ran after him, but I didn't realise he was that quick. We couldn't get anywhere near him until we got to towards the supporters, and like you say, for him to get the winner in that game, it was brilliant. And yeah, he does talk about it a lot.
And during those 135 appearances in the Clarets of Burnley, he linked up with another man who's synonymous with this radio station, Jamie Hoyland.
There was like Ayrsy, Tomo, Mungo, Marlon Beresford, some great lads in there, and it was relentless. You had to be on your guard all the time and be up. You had to get your first strike in first, really, before they hit you. And unfortunately, Parky used to get quite a bit of stick.
All about the dress sense and all that, was it?
He had the worst pair of... I bet he still got them, actually. Chelsea boots ever. And, you know, like, come on, Parky, you can't be... And he wore them with everything. Everything. And he obviously had still his boy band hair from the Middlesbrough days when they all had it. If you look at his pictures when he played at Middlesbrough, all fantastic hair, and he still had that and loved that and everything. But yeah, his dress sense, wow.
In terms of being a right back, he could play, couldn't he?
He could. I mean, I used to hammer him about going over the halfway line, because I'm sure he had a bungee rope on him, because he used to get to halfway line and I'm not going, and we used to push him forward and forward, because he had a great strike at goal, and he also, his delivery when he got forward was superb. He had, I know it sounds daft, but left footers always look great when they're delivering stuff, and Parky had that with his right foot. It was effortless when he used to play a ball, but it was just getting him back then.
After Burnley, another productive spell came with Preston North End.
Free kick for North End once again. Left of centre, 25 yards from goal. Very much in Gary Parkinson range. He strikes the ball right for it. Oh, what a magnificent goal by Gary Parkinson.
Before a serious injury meant that he took a final professional career move to Blackpool. The spell coaching followed, resulting in landing the job as the Seasiders' head of youth under Simon Grayson, and then Tony Parks, and finally Ian Holloway. It was a position that he held right up until September 2010.
Andy Bayes,
BBC Radio Lancashire.
You're with BBC Radio Lancashire this Wednesday evening. My name's Andy Bayes. We're off to Turf Moor from 7 o'clock for Match Night Live as Dan Jewell and Andy Payton look ahead to full match commentary of Burnley against Liverpool in the Premier League. Between now and then, it's our special programme on Gary Parkinson.
A former Burnley, Preston North End and Blackpool defender celebrated his 50th birthday this year and has done a series of different things to mark the occasion. Well, Gary has been living with locked-in syndrome since his life changed back in September 2010.
It's 2 o'clock. I'm David Bailey. The former Preston, Burnley and Blackpool footballer Gary Parkinson is in hospital after suffering a serious stroke. He collapsed very suddenly on Tuesday and was taken to the Salford Royal Hospital, where he's said to be in a critical condition.
Well, this was one of those moments that you just found surreal to take in. You always remember where you were at the time. I was in Italy on a family holiday. I remember my mum ringing me at first, and you think to yourself, this can't be right. There's obviously been a mistake. It's probably another man called Gary Parkinson who's had this illness. We've all been there, haven't we? You receive some news that just turns your stomach, doesn't it? I think I was not particularly great company for the rest of the holiday, if I'm totally honest. It's never that far from your mind, is it? You want to know the news ASAP. You want to find out how he's doing. You don't want to hear the worst. So how I was feeling was completely incomparable with Gary's family. His son Luke was just 17 at the time.
I was at home. I remember it. I was upstairs, and my mum like called us all down into the lounge to say like what had happened, and she said that Dad had had a stroke. And at the time, I didn't really know what a stroke was. Obviously, you're aware of what cancer or a heart attack or thing and things are, but a stroke, I thought, well, I knew it was something serious, but I wasn't sure. I wasn't even aware that it was something in your brain or anything like that. So that was a bit of a shock at first. And I remember we thought at that time that things were looking really bad and there wasn't going to be any kind of recovery. So I remember I walked over to the fishing pond near us and then to the cricket club, like two of my dad's favourite places near home, just to try and bring back memories. But at the time, I remember crying in my bedroom thinking, how can my dad go from being such a strong person to something like this happening?
Your mum said that there was a stage she fully expected that, unfortunately, the worst was going to come and that he wasn't going to pull through. As a 17-year-old, that's an awful age, isn't it, for that to happen?
Yeah, definitely. To be told that your dad might not pull through. I think he had his last rites twice, which is terrible. But yeah, I remember Wayne, who's one of our family friends, he lost his dad at a similar age, and he took me to a Man City game, actually, a few days after my dad went into hospital to try and take my mind off it. And I'll always respect him for that. He's somebody who we go on camping trips and stuff with, and he had a quiet word just in case that did happen. Thankfully it didn't, but I remember seeing my dad very early days in Salford Royal Hospital when he was completely wired up to every machine going, and I thought then that might be the last time that I see my dad, kind of thing, with all the wires. He didn't communicate how he communicates now today with his blinking. He was just literally, I think he blinked then, whereas he looks up and down now. And I remember him, he was there completely, and I said, Dad, can you tell what? And he was twitching and stuff, and that was he wasn't voluntary doing that. That was completely involuntary movements, but that was a little sign to think, well, there's a little bit of hope. Or at least that's what I thought as a 17-year-old, that maybe he was moving his arm or his leg. But thankfully, we've moved on since then, and things are a little better than they were back then.
You're the oldest of three. How old was Chloe at the time? You were 17.
Yeah, she'd be 3 years younger than me. So
she'd have been 14, and Sophie would have been
10 years younger than me, so seven.
So she'd have been seven. Right then, did you have any sort of sense, right, I need to grow up, ASAP. That's almost my growing up done. I've got responsibilities here.
Yeah, definitely. Straight away, almost. I felt like I've got to step into almost my dad's shoes kind of thing around the house, and I still feel a bit of that today kind of thing, that you've got to try and do things that, or say things to my little sisters when they're growing up and becoming teenagers and adults that they might think's a bit cheeky and stuff. I even still do it today with Soph. And it's one last night where she was after trying to, when we're going to the races at the weekend, she was saying, oh, can I bring Brad with me, a boyfriend and things, and can we have a drink? And I was saying, no, we're not encouraging that. And I said to my dad, you won't be encouraging that. And he looked up to say, yeah, to agree with me. So yeah, there's stuff like that where I try and chip in and still keep my little sisters as they are in line.
And how are they with that big brothers like that? Do they quite like it, or sometimes they like, what are you on about?
Yeah, mostly what are you on about most of the time. You know what teenagers are like these days. Chloe's a little bit older, so maybe she sometimes comes to me for advice now. She's sort of getting to the age where you're looking at buying housing and things, so she's asked me about that because I've done that in the last few years. But so yeah, she's going on to be 15, and she thinks that, oh, it's just a big brother whining on again.
How was college and uni, Luke? Because you would assume that, particularly at the ages you were, and your younger sister as well, who'll have been about to start GCSEs and that sort of thing, with everything going on, did you find it in any way distracting or not?
Yeah, it was difficult. College, especially, I was at Runshaw College in Leyland. People probably know of it. And I found that tough, yeah, because it would be a bus journey there, so it was like nearly an hour from Bolton, where we live. The dark nights and stuff at the time that it happened, being in September, it seemed to be a long old year doing my, I think it was second year of college at the time. And then uni was difficult the first couple of weeks, moving away from the first time. I think my mum and my girlfriend Beth, who's now my fiance, they were crying on the way back and things, leaving me there, because it was a big move. My dad was still in hospital at the time. But through help, through like yourself here at Radio Lancs, I did loads of stuff while I was at uni to try and take my mind off things. And although it was a bad thing that happened to my dad, it sort of opened some doors. People were nice to invite me to come and do things, which have helped me now into my own career. So university was a lot easier than to deal with in the end than college was.
Academically, it didn't affect you at all, though, did it?
No, I got a first in the end. It's one of my proudest achievements, yeah. So I can thank my dad as well for that, because I wouldn't have been able to get some places without him.
And what about your sister? Academically, did it affect her or not?
No, nothing at all. She was doing a GCSE, did well. She went to college. She's done a few different things after that, jobs and apprenticeships and stuff. But yeah, she was all of us, even Sophie now, she comes home and tells me about stuff that she's got, like top marks in things. And although none of us will be the most brightest academically, we're not like A-star students or anything. It's not affected us that way at all.
Gary's wife, Deborah, was well aware of how close they were to losing him.
I look back now at that very first day and it just feels like yesterday. I can remember it and the days in between. So time goes fast, you know, and we've done a lot. Gary has come a long way in the 8 years, you know. Again, thanks to everybody. But it's our life. That's how we see it. I don't really want to look back. I just look forward now and, you know, each day if we could change something. That's brilliant. It was very dour in probably the first 6 months, really. And when I realised that there was a possibility we could bring him home to carry on this care, then that's what we wanted to do. So then all my energy went into the house being redeveloped. But yeah, there was always that chance that, you know, and that's in the textbooks, you know, the life expectancy of somebody with locked-in syndrome isn't good. And I only think because of our positiveness and, you know, the team we had around us that, and the inner strength that Gary's always had, you know, from day one, then that's had a lot to contribute to it. And that's why we say now on our 50th year that we're so grateful. We might not have been celebrating 50 years together and our birthdays. And
is he defying the odds then, in terms of what you've just mentioned there?
Yeah, he probably is. Yeah, if you look back in most of the medical books, yeah. Yeah, but he's not the only one now, you know, it is happening. And I think, again, that's medical science that's developing daily. Mm. So it's incredible, really, what he's gone through and where he is today.
Yeah. Is it only when you look at your children that you realise it's 8 years?
Yeah, and we look back on some of the old photographs now and we think, yeah, they've matured and, you know, they've had to. They've shown great maturity beyond their ages, really, and resilience. And, you know, we're so very proud of them. Even now, Gary, you know, wanting the children to be involved in interviews, and he's just so proud of them, and it's nice, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we work with your son, Luke, on a regular basis, and he has been unbelievable, hasn't he?
Yeah. I think he's tried to take on the father role of the family. But of course, he's, you know, moving on. He's got his own house and things now and looking to get married. So the daughter's now taking over the role. The girls are, you know, looking after mum and dad and doing a great job. I can't take that away from them. They're amazing. And I think they'll always have home close to the heart, the three of them. You know, they're very all home birds. But very much like Gary. They've got a lot of Gary's traits, good traits.
Have they?
Yeah.
They've
got
Gary straights, yeah, dearie me.
Yeah.
Do they like racing?
Yeah, they do, actually. Particularly the older two. Yeah, they do.
And close friends were feeling it too. Steve Thompson was Gary's teammate at Burnley, and then they were reunited on Blackpool's coaching staff.
I can remember it like yesterday when it happened. Obviously, when I was over at Blackpool and the news came out there, I'll never forget that day where we went over straight away to see him, me and Phil Horner. And just the sight of the first team squad putting their arms around the youth team when my lad were there, Curtis, and you could see the youth team lads were upset. They were walking around the pitch and first team lads had their arm around him. And it was just so, so sad, because obviously I've played with Parky. We've been coaching over at Blackpool together, and he was just fantastic guy around the place. You know, the youth team, he had it absolutely off to a tee there. The lads respected him and that. And it's so, so sad, you know, when I go and see him and that. But Debbie and the family, to the credit, have been absolutely fantastic. And we're just hoping and hoping that one day we can get Parky back to where he belongs and that. So it was very sad, very, very sad. But hopefully, like I say, we won't forget about him. You know, all the fundraising that we do over there, you know, my family do the fun run. And I've got to say the Blackpool fans have been fantastic supporting me over there. And all the other clubs that he's played for, you know, Preston, Middlesbrough, Bolton, Burnley, they've all been fantastic with him. So hopefully we won't forget about him, and like I say, we're just hoping that one day we can get him back.
For people not aware, you two were teammates at Burnley, weren't you? And as much as best mates, really, who hammered each other on a regular basis in the dressing room.
Yeah, it was just one of those things that, you know, we had a lot of things, you know, our families got on very well. You know, we had the same interest in that, but it was great banter with us. You know, I think we had a good dressing room there. And it was one of those that, you know, we'd ring each other up, we'd bounce things off each other. We played in the same team and all that, so yeah, that makes it even more disappointing when someone close to you falls ill like that. So it was a very sad time, and it just puts everything in perspective sometimes that, you know, these things around the corner and you shouldn't have a care in the world, but it's very sad.
In terms of positivity, Gary is still here and is still battling on. Speaking to his family, they did fear in the very early stages that that would not be the case, Steve, and I think we all did, didn't we?
Yeah, you know, you read about this terrible illness, and you know, he's had great support off the PFA with Gordon Taylor. Obviously they've got carers that go around there to help Debbie and the family, and it's just one of those things that it is day by day. You do hear cases where they do come out of it. There was a lad in Australia called Coughlin that he came out of it. So there is signs that you can come out of it. Hopefully the technology and the treatment can bring him on even more. He still enjoys his horse racing. He still watches the horse racing when I go around there. His tips are still crap. He's always level. He's never down. You've got to try and be positive when you go around and see him and that. And you never know. You just might get that little sign that something might come back and trigger him off again.
Not everybody can go and sit with Gary and find it particularly easy, Steve, because they'll have known Gary before the stroke and find it difficult. When you go, I think David Ayres goes a lot of his Middlesbrough pals come and see him a lot. You've got to put that out of your mind, haven't you? You've got to continue to be exactly the way you were before everything happened.
Yeah, because let's say when you go around there and you start reminiscing about stuff and you start talking about things, you know, obviously he communicates with the blinking of the eye, but if you say something funny then and he appreciates it, he still lasts there and his shoulders still go. And you go back to some of the times in the dressing room and over at Blackpool and some of the funny stuff that we came out with there, just reminiscing, and we're absolutely laughing our heads off. And that's what it's all about. And he still understands that you're the sense of humour, and he does communicate with you and all that. So I think when you go there, you just got to be as normal as you can be with him, because he does understand that's happening. That's the sad thing about it. But yeah, when we go there, it's humbling but great to see him. And with the carers and the people around him, they're trying different treatments and all that. So, but still sad, you know, when you see him.
Family are just incredible, aren't they?
Unbelievable. The two girls and Luke have been absolutely fantastic for him. You know, they've been an absolute strength for him. You know, they go to these cottages where they cater for people like Parky. You know, obviously they take him to Cartmore races. The fundraising will still go on with me, whether it's to get a new up-to-date van, whether it's to get a wheelchair that can turn the lights on or anything like that. So every time we do a fundraising, I'll get together with people, hopefully, like say, from Bolton, Blackpool, hopefully, with the fans there, Preston, all these, and hopefully we can make his life as easy as we can for Debbie and the family. But when you go around there, I can't speak highly enough of Debbie. She's been an absolute tower of strength for him, stood by him all this time, and like I say, she's been fantastic. I only spoke to her the other day, and I'm going to try and get up and see him on one of my days off and that.
David Ayres remembers vividly when he found out the news about his friend and former teammate.
I got a call from Pauline, who's the secretary at Burnley Football Club, and told me what had happened. And as soon as I found out, I had Gary's mobile, obviously, number in my phone. For whatever reason, I don't know what I was thinking, but I actually called his mobile and Debbie answered the phone. And she was at the hospital and I asked, was it possible? Because obviously the family were there and whatever. was it possible I could go to the hospital as soon as possible? And she said, yeah. Probably said it in a way where maybe you need to get here rather quicker rather than later. And when I did arrive at the hospital, he was in a bad way, you know, but his family were around him. And for him to pull through what he had and gone through at the time is a bit of a miracle. But obviously the condition he's in, you know, isn't good. But, you know, he's still alive and kicking. And I think his family are really happy that's the case.
I think it's fair to say, Ezzy, that anybody that knows Gary Parkinson remembers where they were when they found out the news. And that just goes to show what he means to a lot of people, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Gary was, you know, a really good footballer. He'd had a couple of injuries early on in his career. He'd had a couple of setbacks, I think one particularly as Everton as a youngster. But sometimes, you know, in all types of work, you know, you have your off days and you feel a bit down and maybe you feel a bit sorry for yourself. But you know what, going into a dressing room, when Gary Parkinson walks into it, whether you're up for it or not, he was certainly one of those lads who would make you feel $1 million. And the banter, the stick he used to give out, it was just constant. Some of the stories he'd say were repeated on a daily basis, certainly when we went for a shower, but that'll have to stay in the dressing room. But the banter and, you know, the happiness he brought within a group of players, whether he was playing or not, was something special. And like you say, that's why I kept in touch with him.
And Jamie Hoyland was the same.
42, fit as a fiddle still, working in a job he loved. And we all loved working in football because you played it all your life. And you just think, wow, whoa, that's stunned. And I remember going to the hospital the day after and going, and it was just unbelievable, the amount of people there. And you just thought, wow, what is going on? And then more stuff were filtering out. And you're thinking, this is just absolutely tragic what's gone on. And you just wondered what was going to happen next. And I actually got a phone call. I can remember it now. I was driving up New Church Road in Rawtenstall back to my house, and it was Tony Phillips-Kirk who rung me and said, you know, Parky's had this stroke, as we thought then, and he's really bad. He's really bad. And I remember all the way home talking in the car, and then I sat on the wall outside my house still talking to Tony about it. I remember putting foot down the phone and just sat there thinking, wow, what's gone on there? And then it escalated a little bit more with other people ringing, and I rung a few more people to tell them, and then the more news what broke, and you thought, wow, this can't be, you know, his age of him and how he was and everything, and suddenly everything just changed.
In many ways, Gary has defied the odds and continues to do so to this day. Charlie Adam was the Blackpool captain back in 2010. He found the news difficult to process.
Charlie Adam, from the penalty spot, left-footed into the net, sends the keeper the wrong way, and in doing so, sends 2,000 Blackpool fans into delirium.
I remember it, that, you know, when it happened, we were so shocked, and we knew when we went to Newcastle we needed a win, and, you know, that's why when I scored the goal we displayed the T-shirt, and, you know, you never ever forget these things, and as a player it's... It's always in your mind. Even now when I step on the pitch, not very often now, like, but when I do step on the pitch, you always think of the worst things that have happened in your career. Losing my dad and something like that to Parky. Family members passing away. It brings back memories, because, you know, when people are involved in your career, and what, because he had an impact on my career. He always was one that gave me the confidence to go and play, be the best player I can be the best player in the club. And yeah, he loved a laugh and a joke, but also he, you know, he loved to win, and that's what you see with him.
Text 81333, starting your message with the word Lanks. All texts are charged at your standard message rate.
See our privacy notice at bbc.co.uk/local-radio-privacy.
Gary Parkinson at 50 on BBC Radio Lancashire.
I remember the very first time I went to see him after he'd had the stroke. He was at the Priory Hospital near Bury, being really well looked after by so many wonderful people. But you just can't prepare yourself for that first time that you go and see someone who, last time you saw him, was full of life, full of banter, full of patter, full of good humour. And I remember walking in the room thinking, this will be quite straightforward. I won't have a problem with this. And I remember feeling really, really fortunate that Bill Dearden, who worked for Blackpool Football Club at the time, was just in the room with Gary and just about to say his goodbyes before I walked in. Bill took one look at my face and decided that he would stay a little bit longer and taught me very, very quickly that you had to continue your conversation with Gary just as you did before. It is pointless walking in a room and maybe making the atmosphere a little bit more negative. If he sees me upset, then he'll be upset. It was a huge thing for me. I'll never forget it. It has got easier every time I've been to see him since. But back then, it was one of the most difficult afternoons that I can remember having. And I remember leaving the room afterwards when I'd spent probably an hour with Gary and met the family who'd all come in after the school run. And I got back into my car, about to drive home, and I'm not ashamed to say I absolutely burst into tears. It was such an awful experience to see a friend of yours in a condition that nobody ever deserves to be in. And it's just an experience I'll never forget, and one that if ever I'm feeling like the world is against me or ever I'm feeling that I'm having a bad day, the best thing to do is to think about others and to think about people like the Parkinsons who never complain, who get on with life, who get on with what life has thrown at them. It isn't fair what's been thrown at them, but they get on with it, and you have to take massive inspiration from all of them for doing so, because it can't be easy for them every single day, especially Gary, who would love to have a conversation with his wife and kids like every other normal person does. I'm sure he'd probably love to shout at the telly. He'd love to do another commentary on the radio, perhaps. Maybe one day. Who knows?
I mean, it's a big game for Middlesbrough. It's a cup final for us. We'll go there. You know, I would have thought with no fear. The pressure's on them. They're the home team. I know at home, playing in front of the Middlesbrough fans, if it doesn't go well in the first 20 minutes, they'll get a bit agitated and they'll put pressure on a young team, and you know, it could affect players what they do. But our, obviously, Blackpool team will go there. They're full of confidence. You know, they've had a great performance Saturday, even though the result didn't go well. You know, they should have put Barnsley away. But they're full of confidence at the moment, playing really well. I think the players will love the stadium, the surroundings, and they'll go there and really enjoy themselves.
So once the shock of it all had set in for pretty much everybody, the biggest thought on people's minds was, how can a fit 42-year-old suffer a stroke that had left such a horrendous impact? Looking back 8 years on, were there any signs of how this happened, or any signs really of what might have brought it on?
Nothing in terms of that he was going to be ill, as far as I was aware. My dad's always been my hero, kind of thing. So he was Blackpool at the coach at the time with the youth team, so that seemed to be going well. There was stresses with that, obviously. As far as being like ill or having a serious illness like this, I never expected that. You see a fit dad in terms of someone who was 40-odd at the time, and his calves were massive, his thighs were massive, so you think, just like any other footballer, you're never going to have an illness like that, that strikes as quickly as it did.
Parky was doing probably 20 jobs, youth team, collecting the balls, bibs, working with the first team the weekend, and he was just brilliant, just great to have around the place, you know, and we just hit it off straight away, and we had a great bond, and he was part of what we achieved, and was a big spirit into how we done what we done. Parky's two interests were racing and football, exactly the same as mine. So that's all we talked about, was racing and football. And you never ever thought there was anything wrong with him. And it was just when I got that call that one day that he fell ill, it was just an incredible sense of shock.
Still loves his racing, still loves his football, still a character, still someone who will laugh and smile. We're hoping for miracles.
Yeah.
And it's just a case at the moment, Charlie, of keeping him happy, of keeping him believing that everything one day will be all right again, and we'll hear his voice again, because it couldn't half bellow out at times.
It could, and you can hear, I could see it, and I hear it now, you know, at that cold, wet Squire's Gate, the wind battering down, him shouting, moaning, getting stuck into the young players, and just love being around people, and that's what he was like. He always he was always smiling, he was always laughing, and even if it was a bad result, he was the one to pick us up, and he was the one that'd say, you know what, lads, we'll go again, we'll go next week. And to see that disappear so quickly is such a shame, and you always pray and you always hope that one day that it'll turn the corner, but he crossed my path in my life as a football player, and you know, I owe a lot to him and people round the club at that time.
We played against him 2 weeks before it, and I remember being at Squires Gate, and he always loved to moan about everything, even then about his job, but he moaned and he were a bit down. These moaners and they're still happy, and he were a bit upset, a bit about everything what were going on, and not getting his, not being appreciated, I don't think, and you know, you get on with the game and all like that, and you know, you just think, oh, Parky, we're a bit like, but he's like, he can be like that, and I'll, you know, we'll see him when we play him at other one, we'll have a chat and everything. 42, fit as a fiddle still, working in a job he loved, and we all loved working in football, because you played it all your life. You still, your mates who you meet up with and who you talk to, you still see him as your teammates, your footballers, and you're all, how can that happen?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, because I had spoke to Gary a couple of weeks before he had his stroke. I was up in the Lake District with the family, just staying in a house up there for a week. And I spoke to him. I was inviting him to, I think it was Chester Races. I was trying to get him to maybe come. I think he was a coach at Blackpool at the time. And I just thought, you know, it's been a while since we've been out. I was going to invite him to the Stella Group box at Chester, the company I work for, and he was really up for it because he loves his horses. And but he did sound and feel, he was feeling a bit down and a bit rushed off his feet at the time. You know, he had a lot to do at Blackpool. He had a lot of running around, and I think it's fair to say that any club doing under 18s, the academies, they've certainly got a real big workload, and you know, Gary was one of them, and you know, he did seem that he probably needed, you know, a good day at the races or something like that, and was looking forward to it.
And here it comes, Parky, our hero, a picture on the electronic scoreboard, and you are not human if every single person in here is not affected and touched by this. Parky, spirit of 86.
Gary Parkinson at 50 on BBC Radio Lancashire.
Between now and then, the final part of our first edition of Gary Parkinson at 50. In September of 2010, at the age of 42, Gary had a stroke which had pretty significant consequences. Gail Hull is a deputy ward manager and private educator and has worked closely with the Parkinsons from day one.
I met Gary back in 2010 when he came to the intensive care unit. Gary was intubated and ventilated with us for a few days. He was put into an induced coma, and then a few days later the doctors decided to bring him out of the induced coma to see what his brain function was doing, and that's when they discovered that he'd had a stroke that had left him quadriplegic and diagnosed him with a locked-in syndrome.
Looking back to that time, I mean, when you found out and the family found out, it must have been a real tough moment.
It was very tough, yeah. And to discover that he had this locked-in syndrome, and he had to communicate via his eyes, seeing him there, laying in the bed, the nurses having to get to know how to communicate with him, his family having to learn how to communicate with him, supporting the family, supporting the kids, his friends coming. It was a difficult time, but we all soon got used to being able to communicate with him and to see what kind of bloke he really was, really.
Gary's a well-known man in terms of football and in terms of almost being a sporting celebrity in the northwest of England. Just how much has the awareness and everything and all his friends from the world of sport helped him over the last 8 years, would you say?
Oh, they've been tremendous. They've given him a lot of support. His family and definitely the footballing world as well have supported him an awful lot. His family and friends come to visit him all the time, and that's the support that he needs to keep him mentally well as well. Not just physically well, he needs to keep mentally well as well.
They've got a beautiful home here that's been modified for everything that Gary needs. He was in the Priory for a real long time, wasn't he? But to come home, just how much of a massive thing is that for someone that's got the condition that Gary has?
Oh, yeah, definitely. When he came home 2 years later, I think it was, and I then visited him 5 years later, and to just see the atmosphere that he was living in and how fantastic it was. He'd been well looked after, and his physical health and mental health is well cared for, really.
And I suppose when you did come and see him, the Racing Channel was on, wasn't it?
Definitely. There's never a day goes by without it. Never a day.
It's great to have something, isn't it? Whatever it is, whatever your passion is in life, apart from your family and friends, something to keep the mind occupied. And it appears that racing is very much that for Gary, doesn't it?
Definitely. He loves his betting day in, day out. My granddad was a better when I was a kid. And to be able to share some of the things and stories with Gary, we have many a laughs over it. And I've put many of wrong bets on. He gives me all sorts of tips. But we have a fantastic time when we spend the day together.
Well, research into strokes are ongoing. Our chances of regaining our health are much better than they used to be. But the message from the experts are, be aware of the telltale signs and fast.
I'm Mark O'Donnell. I'm the medical director for Blackpool Victoria Teaching Hospitals, but I'm also a consultant stroke physician and have been at the hospital as a consultant since 1994. Stroke is a condition that affects about 100,000 people a year in the UK. Sadly, roughly speaking, about a third of those people will die as a consequence of their stroke. And roughly speaking, about a third of them will be left with significant disability as a consequence of it. And the remaining third will either be left with a minor disability or make a complete recovery. Stroke itself is not a condition. Stroke is what happens when there is damage to the brain. And there are two main reasons why people have strokes. They either have a blood clot or they have a bleed into the brain. The majority, that's about 80 to 85% of people who have a stroke, have had a blood clot. And the treatment for that group of patients is different from those who've had a bleed into their brain.
We are seeing television adverts about stroke, about the telltale signs. Yeah. They are pretty basic signs. Are you happy with the way we are conveying the signal of an onset of a stroke, or do we need to be a little bit more alert than just looking at four letters and that sort of thing?
No, I think that the FAST campaign, it's deliberately made simple so that people who have no medical training can be aware of what's going on. The crucial message for anybody is that if you suspect somebody is having a stroke, don't go away and have a cup of tea and think about it. Call 999 and get your loved one or whoever it is brought into hospital for an assessment. If they haven't had a stroke, that's great. If they have had a stroke and we catch people early enough, then there may well be things that we can do to improve things dramatically for them.
Coming up in next week's programme, we go and see Gary.
Hello.
How are we?
We're fine, thank you. Come on in.
Good.
Come on in.
Great to see you, mate. How are you? You're in front of the telly.
Yeah.
And hear about his favourite things from this year.
We've just been to see Lionel Richie, which was really nice. One of Gary's idols.
He might not want to admit that.
It's too late now. And find out more about locked-in syndrome.
I feel frustrated that there isn't more that we can do to help people with stroke. Technology and knowledge and drugs that we have available compared with 20 or 30 years ago are massively improved. So the outcome for patients with stroke is much better than it ever was.
And how the family will never stop believing that one day Gary could regain his speech or mobility.
I still believe that my dad will maybe kick a football one day. That would be the dream, to get back out on the coaching pitch, where he belongs, like with a team environment.
That's Gary Parkinson at 50 next Wednesday evening from 6 here on BBC Radio Lancashire.